This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Explosive, inflammatory, and false is the way my guest Abraham Foxman describes the argument that Stephen Walt just made on our show and makes in the new book, The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy. Walt's book says the powerful pro-Israel lobby has successfully pressured the U.S. to give a disproportionately large amount of support to Israel and to be unconditional and uncritical in its support of Israel. Foxman has written a new book in response to this argument called The Deadliest Lies, The Israel Lobby and the Myth of Jewish Control. Foxman is the national director of the Anti-Defamation League. Walt counts the leadership of this group as part of the pro-Israel lobby. Abraham Foxman, welcome to Fresh Air. Walt and Mearsheimer say that Israel was a strategic asset during the Cold War, but now it's become a strategic liability for the United States, and America's unconditional support of Israel has reinforced anti-Americanism around the world and strained relations with our allies. Do you agree with them that Israel has become a strategic liability in our unconditional support of it?
Well, number one, it's not unconditional support. The history of the U.S. bilateral relationship with Israel is full of agreements and disagreements. So that's an overstatement which fits their thesis. I think, Terry, it's even worse. They present the relationship between the United States and Israel in a selective reading of history. And first they start with the moral issue. And one needs to understand that it builds a certain paradigm. They first argue that support for Israel was seen as a moral position of the United States. And then they argue and say, well, Israel is not moral. It hasn't helped the Palestinians get its state. And therefore, there is no moral case anymore for Israel. So then they turn to, is it worthy because Israel is in the best interest of the United States? And then, again, in a biased recitation, totally distorted, totally selective, not substantiated, they make a case that support for Israel brings us terrorism, makes us enemies around the world, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I believe their case that Israel is not in America's interest is biased, shoddy, unsubstantiated. Interesting, very interesting, only 2 weeks ago, on August 17th, the United States signed an agreement with Israel giving it $30 billion over the next 10 years in military aid. And the Undersecretary of State, who was in Israel to sign it, said, and I quote, "We look at this region and we see that a secure and strong Israel is in the interest of the United States. Very clear, in the same way as the United States, I am sure, will say if and when it signs the agreement for $20 billion with Saudi Arabia or the Gulf states."
Another argument that Mearsheimer and Walt make is that Israel gets a disproportionate amount of arms and aid, and that this isn't really justified strategically.
Well, I don't know what makes them the experts on what number would strategically be okay. Israel is a country which for many years has been described as an Air Force carrier in defense of America's interest in the Middle East. It's a place of instability. It's a place where terrorism still, unfortunately, permeates too many of the countries. Terrorism is directed not only against Israel, but against America, America's interest. It is a place where America's lifeline of fuel, of oil, continues. It needs to be protected. And Israel has and continues to be, not only during the Soviet, U.S. Hot Cold War days, but now a strategic bulwark for stability. And in an area where Iran is planning a nuclear weapon, in an area where there are arms in the hands of terrorists, of rump groups, America has committed itself to maintain Israel's strategic edge. So none of these countries be tempted to try to wipe it out, as some of them have declared. And so the arms package, by the way, this most recent one, which goes to Israel and goes to Saudi Arabia and Jordan and Egypt, sees Israel and our allies and friends in the Middle East as part of that strategic asset to protect stability, to fight against terrorism, and to protect the values and the freedoms that we all cherish.
Mearsheimer and Waltz say that the neoconservatives who pushed for the war in Iraq were kind of tied to the pro-Israel lobby, and if it wasn't for them, it's unlikely we would have invaded Iraq. So I guess what I'm wondering here is, as the head of the Anti-Defamation League, what were your memories within your group and within the other Jewish groups that you belong to about the debate over the war?
Terry, that's probably their most sinister, dangerous conclusion. And that is that without the pressure of the Israel lobby, of the Jewish community, of the neocons, who in their minds are only Jewish, America would not be in a war in Iraq, which, of course, they then say is against America's interest. And that is, again, abject nonsense. A, if you study, as I have, and it's in my book, where the Jewish community was, there was a debate. In fact, the overwhelming majority of the American Jewish community, as represented, let's say, by the largest membership organization in the Jewish community, which is the Reform Movement, had been opposed to the war in Iraq from day one. So has been the conservative movement. The Jewish community has continued to be critical of the war from its inception. So to believe and to come to the conclusion that were it not for the Jewish lobby and Jews who love Israel, America would not today be at war is not only bias and bigotry, but it's abject nonsense.
First of all, let me say, when Mearsheimer and Waltz talk about the pro-Israel lobby, they say the way they use the term, it's about pro-Israel interests, and not all of the members of the group are Jewish. But also, they acknowledge what you're saying, that there was a lot of dissent within the larger Jewish community about invading Iraq. There was a lot of opposition to that, but that's why they make their next point, which is that the pro-Israel lobby in the United States isn't representative of the larger Jewish community. They describe the lobby as being very hardline, very hawkish, and I wonder if that fits your perception.
Well, Terry, they can't have it both ways, okay? So if that's the case, that we are so diverse and have all kinds, so why write a book about the Israel lobby? I think, again, the most sinister conclusion of all of this is, if, in fact, there is no moral case to support Israel, if, in fact, there is no national interest case, so why is America supporting Israel, contrary to its moral view, contrary to its national interest view? And the answer is because there is a group out there called the Israel Lobby, made up of primarily Jews, who so control the instruments of American foreign policy. This is a historically anti-Semitic canard, that Jews only are not loyal to the country that they're in. And if it is not in the interest of the United States to go to Iraq, and the only reason America's in Iraq because of Jews, that's an act of disloyalty. This is the oldest anti-Semitic canard that Jews have suffered. Now, the fact that two professors, one from Harvard and Chicago, articulated, rather than the Pat Buchanans or David Duke, does not change the sinister conclusion. They build this paradigm, and then they come to a conclusion. And you know what? It's okay for them to say that American Jews are not loyal. That's okay. But it's not okay to say, you know what? That's an anti-Semitic canard.
Do they say American Jews aren't loyal, or do they say—
Well, that's their conclusion, Terry. Their conclusion is that American Jews—let's take just the Iraq issue— acted not in the best interest of the United States, but acted in the best interest what they believe was for the state of Israel. I don't know how else to read it. If American Jews act in concert, as the lobby has acted, in order to push America into a war because of Israel's interest and not America's interest, what other word do you have but disloyalty? That's the conclusion.
But in fairness, I think they're talking about the pro-Israel lobby, which is a lobby group that they say is politically very hardline. They're differentiating between Jewish people in America and this specific lobby. It's the specific lobby group, its use of its influence, and its politics that they are questioning.
Terry, they cannot have it both ways. They wrote a book about an Israel lobby. It is a sinister depiction of how the American Jewish community operates in support of Israel's interest. They didn't write a, and again, nobody wrote a book about the Saudi lobby, the oil lobby, the Greek lobby. Okay, nobody's asking those questions. There is, unfortunately, Terry, a history that this plugs into. And that is, not to be overdramatic, but when Hitler began his anti-Semitic campaigns, he did not begin with Aryan supremacy. Hitler charged the Jews as being not loyal Germans, putting their own interests above the interests of the German people, selling out Germany's interests, bringing Germany to its knees, and therefore they don't deserve to live, et cetera, et cetera. When Stalin began his anti-Semitic campaign, it was that the Jews were not loyal Soviets. They didn't have the interest of the Soviet Union, of communism. They had an interest of Zionism. This is what this plugs into. This is a skewed analysis of recent day history, and it puts all the ills on the Middle East, all the ills that America suffers from 9/11 to the percentages of people that don't like America, not on our policies, but on the Jews or the friends of Israel. Now, you know, big or small, the book is called The Israel Lobby. They define the Israel lobby as a coming together of groups who only care about Israel. Terry, that is sinister, anti-Semitic canards. That's what they're saying. And it's very, very serious.
My guest is Abraham Foxman, National Director of the Anti-Defamation League and author of the new book, The Deadliest Lies. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Abraham Foxman, National Director of the Anti-Defamation League. His new book, The Deadliest Lies, counters a new book by Stephen Walt and John Mearsheimer, which argues that the pro-Israel lobby in the U.S. has pressured the U.S. to give a disproportionately high amount of aid to Israel and to be unconditional in its support of Israel. One of their bottom lines is that they think that the Israel lobby should be more representative of the diversity of Jewish opinion in the United States. They say the lobby largely represents a hardline, hawkish point of view. And their bottom line, they say, is that they'd like to see the lobby expanded to represent a different review, different opinions regarding Israel's future, representative of a larger American Jewish community. Do you disagree with that aspect of their argument?
Terry, first of all, with all due respect, why is that their business, how the American Jewish community works? That's number one. Who made them the mavens and the scholars on how we should operate? Okay, but having said that, again, it is a skewed, biased evaluation of our community. We are a more diverse community than you can imagine. There's more disagreement on issues in our community, including Israel, if they only bothered to look at it.
When you say the community, do you mean the lobby?
The pro-Israel community.
Okay.
I include in the pro-Israel community the right and the left, and I would say the liberal and the conservative. And they do not agree on settlements. They don't agree on issues of all kinds of issues on Israel policy and American policy and support. Some believe America should be more active in promoting a peace. Some believe we should be less active. Some believe arms should be given to Saudi Arabia. Some believe that it shouldn't be given to Saudi Arabia. It is nonsense to say that this community is controlled by a hardcore right wing. They don't happen to like the hardcore right wing. They're entitled. But we have as diverse and as exciting and as open a community. And again, there is a lot of debate in the community. There is. But you know when there isn't a debate? When Israel is attacked, when there are terrorist bombs and suicide bombers, the Jewish community stands together. Mearsha Mayer-Mohr, make that. That's not very important. You won't find very much significant, you know, role being put on the fact of rejectionism, of the wars by the Arabs, of the suicide bombers, that they discount. There's a debate here in Israel. Should Israel have, you know, gone into Lebanon the way they did? Did they have other options? We are an open, diverse, if you will, argumentative community, certainly on these issues. There is no unanimity except in moments of danger. You know what? American foreign policy throughout, yeah, I've been around for 42 years, Terry. I remember too frequently when the United States policy, contrary to the strength of the lobby, sold arms to Saudi Arabia, didn't give Israel loan guarantees, chastised Israel on settlements. So if we are so united and so powerful and so, how come these things went against, quote unquote, not only Israel's interest, but what the United Jewish community thought was in the best interest of Israel?
Would you describe, you know, you're the head of the Anti-Defamation League, would you describe the Mearsheimer and Walt book as defamation, and would you ever try to prevent them speaking someplace because you saw it as defamation?
Yeah, I do see it as defamation of the Jewish people in a classical sense. No, I would not prevent them from speaking. I think they should have the right to speak wherever they want. And I also believe institutions have a right to decide whether to invite me, to invite them, whether this is a legitimate subject or not.
What kind of reaction to the Mearsheimer-Walt controversy are you getting in your office?
The response in my office is one of serious concern, because when these arguments came from the mouth of Pat Buchanan and David Duke and extremist Arab fundamentalists and bigots, that's one thing. We know how to deal with that. We expect it to come. What has happened because of Mearsheimer Walt, because they are two respected professors who I think have hurt themselves with the scholarship of this treatise, and Jimmy Carter, former president, it has taken this issue as, are Jews loyal? How loyal are they? Do they only care about themselves? Into a mainstream debate, not in the fringes of our society where these kind of charges belong, but into a legitimate debate. Now, we're debating in a very, 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 very significant radio network, NPR, which is serious. Now, we're debating the issue, are Jews disproportionately powerful? Do they control too much? Do they care about the interests of the United States? I think that's my staff, and I find that very, very distressing, that they have legitimated an anti-Semitic issue, which used to be in the fringes of society, into mainstream. It is now okay to ask, are Jews loyal? Do they care about America first? How do they control? I find that very, very distressing. And I know, you know, it's an open society, one should discuss it. But why this is now a significant issue, and we are now giving it legitimacy by debating it as if it has merit.
Abraham Foxman, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Abraham Foxman is the National Director of the Anti-Defamation League and is the author of the new book, The Deadliest Lies. It was written in response to the new book, The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy. We heard from that book's co-author earlier in the show.